This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Fight to get a meal, yeah. Wrongfully accused, we had to fight to get the pills. That's why we right to get a deal. He on the team, he gotta eat, you know. Despite the skills, facts. Keep it riding for the fam. You gotta light the wooden wheel straight up. But in the past bag, work up in the trash bag. I'll pass a lie to take the test before I pass class. Yeah, and my family needed bread. I had to come correct. That's why I keep airing it out like I just passed gas.
I spent 3 months in the outpatient program at McLean Hospital, number 2 psychiatric hospital in the world. In Waltham, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. I don't know if it was, you know, a tough moment for me, but it definitely was a defining moment because at that juncture of my life, I knew if I ain't change or things ain't changed in my life, which, and you, I mean, I was with the Dolphins my first year in the Dolphins, so you knew how that was.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But I knew, like, in that moment, if things didn't change, now, I won't go as far as to say, like, I didn't have any suicidal thoughts or anything like that. But I thought that I could lose my career. And that's the thing that's scary. Like, if I lose my career, then what? You know what I mean? Like, as a player, growing up, like, I had this one goal. My goal was I make it to the NFL. That's it. Like, it was no plan B. That was it. I was playing A, that was playing B since I was 6 years old. And this is, like, vivid. This is a vivid picture in my head. I remember this. So I guess the scary thing for me in that moment, and even still to this day, was like, what would have happened if the game was taken away from me? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because at that point in my life, the game defined me.
That's all you like, got.
That's all. Brandon Marshall, the football player. This is what I was born to do. This is my platform. It's my purpose. It's both. So, you know, I guess the defining moment for me was then 2011 on the campus of McLean Hospital. And I was sitting in literally like this in a group. You know, we took self-assessment, mentalization, therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, CBT, DBT, dialectical behavior therapy. And, just different type of group therapies where you learn how to process things, manage your emotions, cope, deal, get back down to baseline. I'm sitting in a circle with people who was cutting themselves. And you can see bandages on their arms and blood seeping through. And I just remember thinking one day, like, having this, almost like having an out-of-body experience where it's like, wow, like, this person just cut themselves. Or this person next to me said that they was going to take their life. So for me, you know, that was a defining moment for me because I realized that I was bigger than football for the very first time. You know, like, I really thought that football, that was who I was, and that's why I was on this planet. So, you know, I don't know what it is for you.
That cutting stuff. People cut because they want to control. The only thing they control in their life is their self, you know what I'm saying, their own pain. And all I could ever control was how good I was on the football field. So when you get injured, when you on top, tell your ACL in sophomore year in high school. So then I'm on all the lists, all the rivals and all them .coms and all, and that's gone. Your name, as soon as you hurt, your name fall off because I ain't played my sophomore year. Ball back, go out there, show out. Get hurt your senior year, so you fall off again. End up getting to Florida, go to Florida, get locked up. Multiple felonies. So I'm thinking I ain't playing now. They about to lock me up for the long haul. All I could control was football. Injury, arrest, that takes me off the field. And all I knew, if I'm on this football field, I could dominate. And football is away from me, just like you said, B. I didn't know what I was going to be. I didn't know what I could control. And that was the scariest thing for me, is not having ball, not having that opportunity to go out here and show what I believe God blessed me with. Blessed me with the ability to do so. Every time football, through injury, through arrest, through whatever, got taken away from me, I just think that put a shield over me. That made me just a little tougher. You know what I'm saying? The weakness around you, you got to take that and make it to a strength. So every time I got injured, in the back of my mind was always, what I'm good at, what I'm here for is gone. And that shit just kept going through and just kept building me up into this impenetrable force by the time I got to the league. Bitch, there's nothing you can tell me. And without those prior arrest, prior injuries, I don't think I'd have made it to the NFL.
Really?
I wouldn't have made it.
I somewhat had a squeaky clean life in a sense. Obviously, no clubbing, no drinking. But a defining moment that kind of almost shifted for me was, I'll never forget, around Super Bowl time, 2007. And it's kind of God's way of tugging you back, like tighten up,
yeah,
in a sense. The incident happened. I'm not going to go into details here. But I got questioned. I had to go into question for murder.
Wow.
For murder. So the fact that my name was even
attached to it,
revolving in that circle in general.
No, bro, you got to give us a little backstory, bro. What you mean?
No.
Like, I'm just saying, like,
no, I don't need to. It's somebody died. I don't need to go back.
Yeah.
For what? But, nah, hell. Not even close. But just being able, having that name intertwined in that situation in general. And the only thing I could think of was, what happens if I lose a game of football? Mine in 2007, I'm really just starting. I'm just getting turning.
Yeah.
You know, and the thought of actually losing that and sitting in that waiting room to be questioned, cold as hell. I'm in there like this too. It's how cold it is.
Bro, hey.
That jail ain't
no joke, boy. Them hard beds, metal beds, it's cold.
Toilet in the middle of the cell. Yeah. Watching dudes go to the bathroom. I don't want to be there no more.
Yeah.
Isn't that waiting room to get questioned and having to answer those questions? That's eye-opening. Everything ends, gone. Can you imagine being put away?
No.
And then my kids.
That's a charge.
Everything going through your mind.
Yeah.
That was scary. Yeah.
That's crazy, Ocho, because I don't think that was like reported or anything.
Yeah, I don't even remember that.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was very eye-opening.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that get, you know, questioned or in
not
the middle of stuff. Like,
he said
not
murder.
For murder.
Well, I mean,
wrong
if you circle. You're from, where are you from? Where are you from? You're from Liberty City. Where is it? Liberty City?
Yeah.
You're from Liberty City. Yeah. It's just a matter of time.
I mean, he was in
I hate to say it that way.
He
go to Liberty City all the time. Like, every time you see him posting a picture, he with
so
somebody in the
Liberty
hood.
Liberty City, like, you good to get questioned for murder?
Yeah.
No. Because
think
in
about
the
that. Like I'm saying, it don't matter if you're in a hood, you're in a country, whatever. You know, if you're in a place.
Wrong circles.
Yeah, it's the wrong circle. Not the wrong circle.
I mean, like, yeah, I think it's common. Like, am I bad for thinking it's common?
To get questioned for murder?
For question for murder?
Murder?
Wait, you're from the NFL?
He's from Liberty City.
Why
you from Liberty City? Hold on,
bro. Go back to the 80s. No, go back to the 90s. Who was running Liberty City? 90s, the early 2000s. Like, Liberty City is serious.
No, we know, like, Liberty City is serious.
Yeah.
But we also know that he was already in the National Football League. So being questioned for murder when you're, like, in the National Football League is a thing.
Yeah.
I know when I got my legal trouble, you go and see how many years you can get. I had felony assault and battery. I looked 10 to 15. It scared the hell out of me. Because I ain't know what the judge was going to say. I ain't know when I went to court. I ain't know if my attorney was going to be good. I ain't know. I'm like, I can get 10 years for this?
That were you in college?
Me. Yeah. That scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Now, UF brushing under the rug, man. I ain't going to lie.
They brush a lot of rug.
Yeah. But
you had Urban Meyer. Because y'all brush a lot of stuff out of Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah. One people, two people?
Hey, we're a football vocational school. Y'all leave us alone. We just create monsters on the field.
I mean, I think my defining moment, you know, it wasn't a low point in my life, but, you know, I was in law school at FAMU in Orlando, and I was a legal intern. And, like, my second week, we got Trayvon Martin, like, as a case. We represented his family. And at that time, it hadn't hit news. All I got was, I was told Ben Crump handed me a picture of Trayvon Martin dead in the grass and was like, make copies of this. And I was like, oh, this is a teen dead, like, with his mouth wide open. And
So you saw the picture?
Yes.
Of Trayvon?
Yes, before anyone knew who Trayvon was, then everything just started happening. You know, we had a meeting, and we're like, we need the country to know Trayvon Martin's name. Because at that point, George Zimmerman was still on the streets. No one knew anything that happened. His parents had just found out that he was dead. Like, he was missing, you know? Like, so this was a whole thing. And I'm just his legal intern a few weeks in. And then we had a conversation about, we need to start a movement. And at that point, like, now it's like...
Hold on. I mean, you said two big things, and I think is it's almost like I wouldn't say a cliche, but it's synonymous with black male, black female get shot or brutalized by police. We say their name, right?
Yes.
So you guys literally had a conversation about we need to make sure America know his name.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Because you had two parents who didn't know what happened to their son, right? Like, it wasn't like people heard gunshots and they immediately knew what happened. They couldn't find him, right? And so they had to call the morgue. They had to call the police and say, my son is missing. And then they found out what happened, where his father lived. So then we just like, we have to protest because there was no arrest. They let George Zimmerman go home. And I'm literally standing outside the state prosecutor's office protesting. And really the first ask was, you need to arrest George Zimmerman, right? And that was such a defining moment for me because one, I was traumatized. I had never seen a dead body before. I had never seen, I'm from Kansas City. It's always top 10 murder rate, but I had never seen a dead body before. So even just seeing his face dead in the grass was traumatic for me. And then knowing that his killer was out just roaming the streets was also traumatic.
Yeah.
Then the next traumatic thing was they hadn't even released the police calls yet. They hadn't released the tapes. So we wanted them to release the tapes. So I was with his parents when we heard for the first time the police call where you could hear Trayvon in the background screaming for his life. Because at that point, we didn't know what had happened, right? It was like, oh, all we knew was George Zimmerman's side where it was a tussle and, you know, Trayvon attacked him. And everyone's like, that doesn't really sound like Trayvon, but we didn't have any proof. So hearing this boy's, and I say boy because he was 17 years old, this boy's last breath on a call, and it's his first time, it's the first time his parents have heard it, and I have to hear them break down. I mean, it was the most traumatic thing I've ever experienced, but it made me realize why I went to law school, why I wanted to be an advocate, why me, Ben Crump, and Natalie Jackson, why we do what we do, right? Because we're advocates. And at that point, nobody seemed to give a damn about this black boy. And this was really, Trayvon was the reimagining of the civil rights movement.
The start.
We hadn't protested in years. So to have this, and then me on the front line, all right, go lead this protest with Jesse Jackson. Go lead this protest with
you're leading that?
Yeah, because we needed it to come from the youth. So it was FAMU law students with me on the forefront, and it was FAMU undergrad students driving from
Tallahassee. What's interesting is that, like, where Trayvon's life was taken from him by George, Mr. George, it's crazy to think that he's still walking the streets, but that's a whole nother conversation. Wow. Because that could go two ways. That could go to the street, and I could go, the legal system, right? But, that's where I pretty much, like, the second half of my childhood was spent in Seminole County. You know, that was our rivals, was Sanford.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that, that happened right around the corner from pretty much where I grew up.
And this wasn't a bad neighborhood, right? And so I think when you look back, like, now it's like, protests are normal. It's the norm, right? Like, we've been saying, say her name, say his name, but Trayvon was the first. And that was really when I found my purpose. And even though I wanted to work in sports, I was so determined to challenge the NFL to use its platform for people like Trayvon, because Trayvon plays sports. Trayvon could have been any one of you three, right?
Yeah.
And he needed that advocacy. And that's what really defined my career and really my life.
She's way better than we are, fellas. We all talking about our career. We all myopic. We just there.
Yeah.
I can't play ball no more. That's real.
Yeah.
That's real to change the world, man. That was
but up. I mean, why you feel like that? Because, I saw a stat on Instagram this week. And it said, like, right now there's a million majority boys and then a handful of girls playing high school football right now. Almost 7% makes it to the next level, NCAA. Out of that 7% of that million that makes it to the next level, NCAA, college football, less than right around 1% make it to the NFL. You know what I mean? So I guess my question is, when you think about those numbers, do you, like, how much of that was luck that like you made it to the league. I mean, even you, S.A., when it come back to you, you can think about that because you made it to the league, too. You spent 7 years in the NFL.
Yeah, I beat the average, you know what I mean, of league years.
That's right.
And I came from two HBCUs, and it's not hard, but it was pure hustle. But it is a little bit of luck.
My question is, like, how much of it is luck, though?
I think it is. Like, a lot of it. A lot of it's luck, circumstance, opportunity.
So you feel like Ocho Cinco is, like, you made it to the Cincinnati Bengals.
I almost messed up, obviously, bouncing from school to school, never having an opportunity to play at Oregon State. Obviously, the biggest stage there is to be able to showcase my skill, even get an opportunity to go to a combine. So, obviously, I wasn't an academic scholar. It wasn't my thing. My green light out of my situation in childhood, my dream was football, and that was my lone focus.
Yeah.
And I almost didn't make it because I hated school. Like, I literally hated and dreaded school. So I think it was luck. It was a little bit of luck.
Only thing you can call luck with making it to the NFL is injury. Trouble, getting in trouble is your fault. Seriously, I'm a dude. I got locked up. Getting in trouble was my fault. I got drunk and started fighting, whooping ass. If you don't work
hard, you start whooping ass, bro.
Started whooping ass. Yeah. Boy, I got the Florida, got the 245 yoke on that creatine. Bitch, I went to knocking motherfuckers out. I knew what I was doing. But that was my fault. If in that situation I talked about earlier, if I wasn't got locked up, that was my fault. If you don't work hard enough to go out there and start, you know what I'm saying, if you were back up your whole 4 or 5 years of school, that's your fault. Work hard enough. The only thing that I think is lucky about making professional sports is not getting injured or not getting injured to a point where you can't play no more. Yeah. Everything else is on you. Trouble, work ethic, all that is on you and it's in you. You can have people around you, but if that shit ain't in your heart, you ain't gonna make it.
Some people work all their life and still just don't have the skill set to play at that level.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just ain't got it.
That's why I don't think it's luck.
Yeah.
I truly.
But are you not lucky to be built like that? Like, are you not lucky for your God-given talent? Like, some people who
are
just
DNA.
Freaks. His work ethic, like.
But then you got on the other end of the spectrum, you got Tyreek Hill. You know, he built, he cut, but he a little dude. So yeah, I'm 6'5", 230, which I think that's a blessing, and I played into that. But then you got other guys in the league that's like super small, and they still make it.
Well, first of all, he's fast as lightning. He still has a God-given talent.
That cheap showing. That cheap fan is showing.
Chad, he ain't fast as lightning.
He's fast.
That's a God-given talent. Like someone like Jimmy Butler is a good example because he's not great, like super great in any area. He's just a dog.
If Tyreek Hill didn't run track his whole life and grind, he would not be that fast.
When he was racing Ocho, he was running like this. He had no form. No, not Ocho. I'm sorry, T.O. Yeah. When he was racing T.O., he was running like this.
He's just fast.
All that track went out the window.
He's just fast.
That boy was running like this.
There's some people who are just fast.
And Usain Bolt's fast. He'll get his ass knocked out on the football field.
Well, is Usain Bolt like...
You see what I'm saying? I don't believe in luck. Only thing, if you don't get injured, luck has nothing to do with why I was better than the dudes I beat out to get there.
Yeah. But 1% NFL players are 1%. It's only 1,500.
Yeah.
Only 1,500 out of a population of how many?
320 million.
That got something to do with luck. I don't care what nobody say.
You think you got something to do with luck?
Something to do, a little bit of luck.
Bro, I don't think you got anything to do with luck.
You need
bro.
A little bit of luck, the timing and opportunity. Timing, opportunity.
Timing and opportunity is real. But here's the thing, though.
Being prepared when the opportunity presents itself is
bro,
very
I seen
important.
How you work. And like, to me, it's like, yes, it's preparation meets opportunity. I do believe that. But like, you could have easily stopped. How many people in your situation where it's like, you know what, I ain't getting to Oregon State. You know, I don't want to go to school. And it's like, you know what? So if I gotta go to school to get to Oregon State, then that means I can't play football because I don't like school. And they just stop.
They don't want it enough though.
That's my point.
That's why I hate when people say, I don't have no motivation. That come from within. If you need somebody else to motivate you to do whatever your end goal is, then you ain't even about that.
Yeah.
Like, but you gotta want
on
that
what,
shit.
It depends
anything
on what school you go to. Like, what if you go, there's a lot of guys who just went to a sucky
I went
ass
to
high school.
I went to UCF my junior year. We went 0-11. We was 0-4. You know what I mean? And in my mind, like, I remember being in like middle school, eighth grade, and I don't know, like, I just thought, like, just running was the path, right? So I didn't have no rhyme. There was no rhyme, no reason for what I was doing, but I just knew I needed to work. And there was a few things that stood out to me when I think about, like, how do you make it? And then are you prepared? Like, number one, I had my younger brother. He was 6 years old at the time. And I would be like, all right, bro, on the weekends, I'd be like, all right, jump on your bike. And his name is Bijan, right? So Bijan, I'd be like, B, jump on your bike, and then I'm going to go run. You know what I mean? I don't know, you know, I don't know how long it's going to, it is, but I'm going to run the Kmart on the corner way down there on Redbug Lake Road in Seminole. And I'm going to come back, you know, come to find out when I got older, I was like, let me test that out, jump in my car and time and see how long, you know, measure it, see how long that was. And it turned out to be like 5 miles. But on the weekends, every weekend, what I would do is I would tell my brother, 6 years old, to get on his bike and then like, let's go ride. And I would run, he would ride. And then there were sometimes he even ran 5 miles. So it was like that mentality, you know, I just think it's different. And, you know, it, walking through the house, I would hit a corner going from the living room to the dining room corner. I would act like that was a route. That was an outcut for me. Bang, bang, bang. You know what, I mean? You know what I'm saying? You know exactly what I'm saying.
I do it in the mall. I do it in the grocery store. Anywhere where there's a lot of people, I would always use people. And just shake. Just that, oh, that's
so y'all
a good
just
one.
Juking people in, yeah, like juke, in a Walmart?
In public. I ain't never do that anymore. Like, you know, you cross people, you say, excuse me. I would never say, excuse me. I always do a move. Always. And I still do it to this day.
You still do
it. For no reason.
But this the thing. This the thing here now.
Hey.
How old are y'all?
I'm 36.
No, but, how old were y'all when y'all these stories?
Oh, I mean, I was 14, 13. 14. But
I was in high school.
So let's say 15 and 14.
Yeah.
How many 14-year-olds, how many 15-year-olds were working that hard at that age? Even had a thought, like Chad was saying, even had a thought to work that hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Who gonna get up and run 5 miles? That's not fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not fun. You play, think about football, you play 10 games. The rest of that shit ain't fun, fellas.
Yeah.
That's what is inside of people that make it.
I think anybody, nothing. Even you know, playing Mike Backer, the way you played it, like, that's the craziest thing to me.
I ran him over one year.
No, you didn't run him over.
What?
Hold on.
No, you did not.
Chad, you didn't come in there.
I ain't run.
Chad, you don't come in there.
I ain't run you over?
Chad, I'm a fan of yours. You don't go in there with us.
Man, I played in the trenches. What?
In what trenches?
I played in the trenches. Yeah. I played receiver, Chase, but I was.
You,
nah, man, don't play.
Hold on. You ran him over what year? You got to give us
a lot. Yeah, I caught a slant, and he thought I was going to cut up, but I just ran into him and gave him a little shoulder, a little whip, and then dreads went flying.
You know what? I grabbed you, I slid you in my back pocket, I walked you on over there. He pulled you out of my pocket.
Listen, you can pull up the film. The people at home, I don't know where my camera at, pull up the film. It's on now.
It happened.
The eye in the sky don't lie.
The eye in the sky don't lie.
We'll see.
Just to put a cap on that last discussion, like, I know, Ocho, you think it's luck. I don't think it's luck. I think that there's
Why
a certain
can't it be
makeup.
Both?
I just think it's a certain makeup. Even think about Channing and he playing Mike Backer. Oh, we got Chef Nancy here.
Yeah.
What we got?
A salmon niçoise salad today. Something light.
Something light? Okay.
Yep, a salmon niçoise salad.
Let's go.
Chef, okay. I see what you got on. What's that? Gucci? Louis? What's that?
Oh. Fresh. Oh.
Gucci. I got a little Gucci.
Yeah, stay clean now.
I like that fit.
I can post this.
Thank you.
I can post this?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Post this.
Thank you.
Chef, you on Twitter?
Am I on Twitter? No, Instagram. Ooh. I'm a little too old for Twitter.
All right, so we got to, Chef. So we talking a lot about like defining moments in our life, and you know, I got the same question for you. When do you feel like, you know, it was like a do or die situation in your life, a defining moment?
Oh, well, we might have to talk about the salad. This is a... basically, it's the salmon niçoise salad. It derived from a little city, Nice, in France. Yeah. And I went to the French Culinary Institute. That was a turning point for me, a defining moment when I realized that I just wanted to become self-sufficient and be able to take care of myself. And so that was a defining moment for me. And the salmon salad is really actually an ode to my old school that I went to.
So, like, your journey... from, you know, in your marriage where your husband, you know, really was an amazing provider and did everything.
Yes, he did.
And when you made that shift, it was like, you know what, I'm going to go do what I want to do. And how old were you?
40 years old when I went to culinary arts school.
So you 40 years old.
11 years ago.
11 years ago, 40 years old, starting. Wow, God.
Looking good, girl.
What?
Looking good, girl.
Hold on, that caught me off guard. She said that was 11 years ago. Yeah, that's a whole damn.
Yeah.
So, but like when you made when you flipped that switch, like was there anybody that you looked back and was like, yo, you know that move that I made really impacted these people's lives and
my daughters.
What you mean?
Because it showed them that it's never too late. A lot of people around me too, but for the most part, my daughters.
Yeah.
And just showing them that at any age you can make a switch, you can change. At 40 years old, I stayed home for about 2 years after culinary arts school. And again, I think I said it before, my first celebrity client was Kelly Rowland. I gave her lessons and I still keep in touch with her.
Kelly's nice. Yeah, I saw Kelly at the Roc Nation brunch. She's like, where's Chef Nancy? I love Chef Nancy. So Kelly Rowland.
Yes. I worked for Tyler Perry through another chef. Robin Roberts recently. Intro role. Brandon Marshall and Mishi Marshall. But for the most part, I've been with the Marshalls for 4 years, and that was just incredible for me.
Yeah.
Just the opportunity, the way you embraced me.
Yeah.
And your family embraced me, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. You're
and
easy to embrace, I'll be honest.
Thank you. Happy to be where I'm at. And I hope you guys enjoy the
show. So the message from Chef Nancy tonight is, she don't give a damn how old you are.
It's never too late.
It's never too late.
To make a change. Everything leading up to where I'm at today is why I'm where I'm at today.
Mm.
You know?
Okay, but let me ask you this.
I might have did a few things differently, but I wouldn't.
How do you stand out from the other chefs? Like, is some of that just you have the touch? Or are you working harder than other chefs?
The way they work is different. I never really wanted to be in front of a camera. That was somebody else's idea. And I'm grateful for that too. I just love to cook and that brings me joy when people enjoy my food. I didn't have to do the extras. I already had a home. I already had most of the things that a lot of the younger chefs are striving for. So for the most part, it was the love of the craft and then just being embraced and people enjoying.
So if you had like a style, like Ocho, they call him Sweet Feet.
Oh.
Like, what they call you? He's known for his feet. I'm going to call him Sweet Feet. Channing Crowder, he hammerhead. Look at his big old head. You know, Chef, he was one of those football players that just want to hit people. So we going to call him Hammerhead. And I was just Debo. You know, I just big
what
receiver,
am I known
Debo.
For back home?
Yeah, so like, yeah, for you,
back home,
how would
I'm
you define your craft?
My craft or me?
Like, both, I guess both. No, more so your craft.
Yeah,
like,
the identity of you as a chef.
Yeah.
The identity of me as a chef is being able to recreate anything that I've tasted. I was fortunate enough to travel the world, and one of my hobbies was going to restaurants and just tasting different things. And the hobby was coming home and trying to recreate them. I might not get it the first or second time, but by the third time, I got it. And working for different celebrities, they want you to recreate what they've had other places, other countries. They want that in their own home. One of Kelly's guests one night when she came to New York for the US Open was Serena Williams. And she's like, where are you from? So Kelly goes, Jamaica. So she goes, she was saying, trying to say Jamaica, Queens. Serena was like, Jamaica, can you make some oxtail? But Kelly's like, Jamaica Queen.
Right, Jamaica Queen.
Big but difference. I was like, no problem. I'll make you that oxtail. So the next day she came back after one of her games. That and she wanted a dark and stormy. And then Kelly asked for some dessert that I've never heard of before. But it's all about reading. And she was like, it was a strawberry Romanoff. You ever heard of a strawberry?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't. And it was at the time I didn't. And that was at some restaurant in Houston that she used to get it from. So I looked it up and then recreated it with some type of dessert with cream and cookies. And my take on it was to put the Biscoff Delta cookies in it. So
yeah.
I did that.
Oh, I love those cookies.
Yeah, I did that, recreated it, gave my little remix to it, and gave it to her and Serena the next day. And they enjoyed it.
All right. Well, we're going to bring you back.
You recreated this. Good.
Yeah, this is bomb.
Good.
Thanks, Chef. We're going to bring you back when we talk about Serena when she won that 24th title.
Okay.
Did I say that right, Essay?
Yes, she did.
All right, I said that right. Okay, cool. Because, you know, SA's a super duper Serena fan.
Serena's the greatest athlete of all time.
Male all right, or well, there female. We go. I guess that's the next topic.
Male or female?
So you think, hands down, don't matter, LeBron James, Odell, no, I, sorry, Odell. Athlete. I went to say, hold on.
Boy, what the hell are you about to say?
The hell?
Well, because when you say athlete, when I think of athlete, the best athlete I've been around was Odell. But the greatest, like, when we say athlete, the GOAT, that's a, like, GOAT and athlete's different.
Like,
I'm thinking about
ability?
Body control.
You think
about
athlete ability.
I'm talking about ability. Like, I don't care about performance. I'm talking about ability. So let's go back. The greatest GOAT, like, the greatest GOAT. So you think, hands down, male or female, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, I even put Lindsey Vonn in there. I'm a, you know, I like
skiing. Oh, God.
Yeah. Yes.
I need worse than mine.
So Serena Williams is the best athlete ever.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Yo, this is Brandon Marshall here to talk to you about some of my favorite things to eat. The carb fear is real, but carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love the most. Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They've remade carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT, savory breakfast burrito, or mouth-watering cheeseburger. Something for every craving, including sliced bread, loaves, buns, and tortillas. And they have monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the 2 gram net zero hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb hero cheddar biscuit. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code athlete at checkout. That's athlete at hero, hero.co.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. The Active Cash Credit Card is ready when you are. With unlimited 2% cash rewards, the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, that's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/active. Of cash.
23 grand slams. That's not even her overall like record. That's just the big ones, the majors.
Yeah.
She won her first one when she was 17.
Coco just did that. Didn't she win a major?
And guess what? But Coco has not won 23 since, right? So literally, she's been reigning for over 20 years. When you play tournaments, you literally have to play how many rounds? And everybody plays you the best. You're also, you and your sister are the first black girls to ever do this shit. She is absolutely the greatest athlete of all times. Absolutely. She is still the scariest player to play. And yes, she's had a rough time since she had her baby, where she almost died from, by the way. Let's put some respect on that.
Yeah, it's true.
She still is the scariest player to play.
It's a whole other conversation.
When you play Serena, you have nothing to lose. Because nobody's expecting you to win, so you're going to play your best. Like, think about the games that y'all played where everybody had counted you out. You have no other, there's no pressure.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I mean, really, are y'all about to really win? No. So you might as well ball out. The pressure is when you're supposed to win a game and you don't. When you're the underdog, you always play your best. And she literally gets everybody's best every single game. There's girls that have beat her that haven't won a major since.
Yeah.
But they ain't got nothing to lose because it's like you're about to play Serena. She's the greatest of all time. She has the greatest serve of all time.
Yeah.
Go out there and do your best.
All right, so you got Serena. Who you got?
I got to go with MJ, man. I got to go. The numbers, like, you want to count championships, I'm with it. Serena, bad woman now. Because when we start doing the gold, you start putting Jordan against Serena, against Tiger, against Muhammad Ali. Now, you talking about some of the greatest, some of the best ever. I put Jordan up there because what he did for basketball, what he did for young black men everywhere, on a different level. Like, I know Coco Gauff and what's the new girl named?
Naomi.
Naomi. Naomi bad, too, now.
Yeah.
So I think they're coming up.
And they're standing on the shoulders of Serena.
But what Jordan did for marketing, what Jordan did for money, what Jordan did for just giving these guys what they have now and what basketball has become, I think Jordan did more for basketball than Serena did for tennis.
As long as you acknowledge that the only reason why Jordan did more for Serena is because of male privilege. If Serena was a man, it wouldn't be even a question if she was the greatest of all time. Yes, she can't get the deals. The fact that she's the greatest female athlete and she's not even in the top 10 highest paid athletes, because she's a black woman who doesn't fit a size 2. So just acknowledge that male privilege plays a part in that.
And if Serena was white, she could hit those points.
If Serena was a man,
that's what I'm saying.
If Serena was a man, she would be able to do the things for the community that you're giving credit to Jordan for. But Serena single-handedly changed the game of tennis. Single-handedly.
Yes. I've watched her. Her serves,
yes.
No, they can't even sing them. I love Serena.
That's TV and that's media. This is what I would say, like, it's to each his own. Like, some guys like skinny girls, some guys like thick girls, right? Some guys like just exotic girls, some guys like pretty girls, some guys like mixed girls. It's to each his own. That's what I believe.
Some guys like BBWs.
What you like?
BBW.
What's BBW?
Hold on.
What's BBW?
You don't know what BBW is?
No, what's
just
the BBW?
Just they got me lifting weights for, man. BBW,
whatever. Gotta get up underneath it.
What did he say? Ooh, what is a BBW?
Beautiful black woman.
Oh.
Anybody it's 200
beautiful.
Up.
It's
200
big.
Up.
Big.
It's,
my phone.
No, it's big hold and beautiful. Big and beautiful women.
In my phone, 200 and up.
Hold on. You like
pounds?
Big girls?
What? Yeah.
What would you like about big girls?
It just, you ain't never, oh, well.
So that's mad. So now Ocho proved my point. Well, so now I'm like.
A lot of men like Serena's body, by the way.
The world has done a good job at is really, you know, equally like evening out the playing field, you know, because like we have this picture in our mind, like their sex cell, you know, oh, what is a beautiful woman? They're shaped a certain way. Their hair a certain way. And the reality is like everybody's different. You know, the bodies are different. So when you look at why Serena in the peak of her career, and some say she's still there, but I don't, you know, it's like, no. The prime of her career, why wasn't she bringing in those marketing dollars? Is where she's at now and where the world is at is people are like, you know what? We're talking about, you know, how we should approach sex, how we should approach the woman. Because, you know, our world is sexist, bro.
Very.
I'm just saying, keep it a meritocracy. Don't, you can't bring up Jordan and say, oh, what he was able to do for, you know, for black men and in the deals he was able to cut. And you can't use that against Serena because Serena has never been given the opportunity to make those life-changing, those game-changing deals because she's a black woman that doesn't fit the stereotype.
When you talk about the best athlete, she is the greatest woman athlete ever. I'm not sure why we're trying to lump Serena.
No, the conversation is greatest athlete ever.
You can't put a woman against, you can't
yes,
do
you
that.
Yes, you can.
You're saying
the greatest female athlete of all time.
She's the greatest
why
athlete
Why are you trying to compare
time?
Her to men that are much greater on different, I don't even know how to differentiate the.
How are they greater?
Are you trying to compare Serena and Michael Jordan?
Absolutely.
Why you think you can't compare them?
How are you going to compare?
Because are you thinking?
Are you going to compare Serena and Kobe Bryant?
23.
I'm asking the question.
Yes, she's greater than Kobe Bryant.
All right.
23.
I guess this is the question, Ocho. Can you compare Tiger and Kobe? Can you compare Tiger?
Why can't you compare one?
And Jordan.
I mean, the sports are completely different too.
That's what I'm saying. So can you compare
them?
All right. Can you compare Tiger? Let's throw Peyton. Let's throw Tom Brady in there. Can you compare, and the reason why I'm using that as an example is because Tiger Woods plays golf.
Right. It's an individual sport.
Yeah, it's an individual sport, and then we also look at golf like it's golf.
It's the same as tennis. Questionably athletic.
You know, there's a certain skill that you need to be able to be successful.
It's questionably athletic.
That is a great topic, though.
What you guys have to do with your bodies, that I is, do not think. Now, granted, it is skill, right? It's muscle memory with golf. What you guys have to do with your bodies, golf player. You look at golf players and some of the Phil Mickelson. Like, really? You're gonna compare his body to yours?
But there's still
no.
a skill.
So now you body shaming. So
no,
now you
no.
body shaming.
No, I said
body
skill.
Shaming.
I said skill.
See body shaming now. See, you see how it go? You see how it go? It's a double standard.
No, it's not
so
a
you
standard.
You talk about men.
It's not a double
yes,
standard.
It is. So Channing gets on you because he says, oh, you can't or Ocho, like you can't compare men and women athletes. And then all of a sudden we go to sports. And now you're saying, oh, can you compare a golfer's body to a football player?
No, I said what you guys have to do for your body and your athletic ability is very different. Muscle memory is different than pure strength and training. It is a different game. It is a different game. And who's going to argue with me on that?
I think the biggest difference, I think what we're talking about is individual sports and team sports. To win as a team is a lot harder than to win. Just like you're saying, and Serena's out there by herself, but she's out there by herself. Jordan got to depend on them four dudes on the court. Brady got to depend on them other 10.
First of all, basketball is such a bad example because literally you give the ball to MJ.
Uh-huh.
Basketball is not
and
a
team sport. He could have won it without Scottie.
Football is more of a team sport than Scottie. Basketball.
You that, believe that? I would like to hear the public's
so
opinion.
So Jordan won without Scottie.
On what you said on the comparison of just lumping everybody in one and who is the greatest athlete of all time. I would love to hear what the public has to say about that. Outside of just us here discussing it.
Yeah.
Because to me, when I define Serena, I define her as the greatest female athlete of all time.
So, but it was interesting because I have this photo in our old facility where it says, great. I have Serena Williams, beautiful portrait of her, and then it says, greatest female athlete ever. But then I crossed out female.
Thank right? you.
Because in my head, I think she's the greatest athlete ever. Because I think if it was a male doing what she did and how she dominated,
exactly.
We would be saying, I don't know if we would say that she is the greatest, but it definitely would be a debate. You know, who's the greatest of all time? Is it LeBron? Is it MJ? Is it Tom Brady? Is it Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
Like, if Serena was a dude, she would be in that discussion 100%.
That's a good one.
She literally almost died giving birth. And she's been to how many finals? You know how hard it is to get to the finals? How hard is it to get to the Super Bowl? Extremely hard, right?
That's a team game.
But it's still hard, bro. It's still hard.
It's a team game.
If you're the star of the team, then you have a big hand in getting to the Super Bowl.
When you're in control.
And none of y'all have done what she's done, and a lot of male athletes haven't done what she's done. She's made it to the Super Bowl of tennis so many times.
It's an individual sport. You're in control of getting there.
That's true.
That doesn't change how hard it is.
Yeah, but yeah, it do. Yeah, it do. Yes, I'm going to put your side in there. Yeah, it do.
No, it does not.
You're relying on 10 other people to get the job done.
It's like a track athlete. Look who...
Tom Brady does it.
Yeah, but he relies on 10 other people for it to get...
He got the greatest coach of all time. He's relied on a lot of people we've never heard of before.
He got the greatest coach of all time. He got Bill Belichick.
Okay, so now it's the coach.
He got Bill Belichick.
So is it the 10 other people or is it the coach?
He's part of it. The coach is part of it.
Okay.
What about the Barry Sanders? What about the greatest guys that just didn't have a team? And you can't win. You can't win. Can you? If you do not have a team and you're a monster, you can't win. Randy Moss. Randy Moss is the best. Sorry, fellas. The best receiver I think I've ever touched the field with.
Yeah.
Him and T.O.
Randy Moss had to go
T.O.
old.
Randy Moss had to get old and go
to New England to go to a good team to win a championship. Serena's out there by herself. But on the other edge, Serena's out there by herself.
But when you do comparisons, you have to put it in context. So what you can't say is, oh, well, that's an individual sport, so that's easier. You have to put it in context.
I didn't say it was easier.
Well, that's kind of what you're saying.
Well, it's much harder to do it as a unit when you have to rely on everybody else.
So when you say it's harder, you mean you're saying that what Serena did was easier. Like, that's like just the automatic comparison. No.
I'm sure it's difficult. Obviously, she's playing the best in the world.
Just admit that you guys have a problem with comparing women to men in sports.
I disagree with you.
I said she's the greatest female athlete of all time.
And I said she's the greatest athlete of all time.
I still would like an open discussion to hear the rest of the world's answer on that.
I think we should open it up.
I want to speak that out. But how do I word it so it doesn't come off offensive? I don't like
you can't. You can't win that fight. Tell us about what do you mean by that? Because like
the first, here's a, the there's first a lot of answer. Serena.
So Ocho tweeted out to what? How many right. fans you got on
right.
Twitter? Followers?
Three million.
So he got 3 million.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said,
exactly.
Who's the greatest athlete ever, female or male? and it came, the first it's one Serena. Came back to Serena.
The first word. And I and believe then it goes that. Floyd, Kobe.
Floyd.
Yeah, I win 23. That's interesting. Serena, 23 majors. And all right,
hold on.
Me.
You said something interesting. You said that being a woman, it's hard.
And then being a black woman.
Well,
being,
you said
being,
woman.
Being a woman is a journey. Being a black woman is an even longer one.
Well, what do you mean by that? Because I say that because, you know, like as you, I think we're more conscious now, and the world is challenging men to really think outside of ourselves and this machismo lifestyle that we have. And like every day it's a learning process for us, right? Like we had this Me Too movement and it really made us think, you know, because I remember moments growing up where, you know, looking at a girl's butt or touching a girl's butt and you're in elementary, like that was a thing. And now we're seeing that, oh, that's bad, right? So I think like we had this culture shift. So when you talk about, you know, like the woman's journey, I don't think that a lot of men understand what that means because we don't experience it and we don't have these conversations. So what does that mean?
I mean, I think that we have to acknowledge that black women, there's intersectionality, right? So not only do we have to be a woman, which is already 10 steps back, we have to be black women, right? So we're at the back of the line. We have two things going against us. And then let's not even bring up economics. So if you happen to be poor, if you happen to be from the hood, you have even more going against you. So coming up in the league, I'm in the NFL, I'm at Pro Bowl, and everybody's asking me like, oh, you here to find a husband? I'm like, no, I'm actually working. But that's just what they see when they see me. They don't see a lawyer. They don't see an educated woman, right? And that's something that I have to overcome that a lot of people don't have to overcome. Y'all want to talk sports, and there's a lot of women that can talk sports just as good or better than you. But there's a notion that women can't talk sports. There's a notion that women don't know football. Some of the greatest football coaches have never played, or they were trash.
Yeah.
But somehow we think that a woman coaching football is out of this world when some of the greatest coaches of all times never played or didn't play at a high level. Yeah. Probably played as far as girls can play in high school. But we still have that. And then to add race to that, I have to be a woman, I have to be talked over, I have to be second guessed, and then I have to also be black. I have to fight those stereotypes too. So it's certainly a harder road for me. And I think that holding that against Serena is problematic. Yeah. She hasn't gotten deals plainly because she is a black woman, and she's also a black woman that doesn't have light skin, that's not a size 2, but her body is sexualized. So if you go to the strip club, you see a lot of girls that look like her. So it's okay to sexualize her, but it's not okay to promote her from a commercial standpoint. You want to exploit her, but you can't let her make money off of for her own good. And that's a problem. Yeah. And that's what black women go through.
Yeah.
It's always been like that, though. I mean, black women have always had to be 10 times better than their competition just in general. In all facets of life.
Absolutely.
Facets of life and just in general. Look at me. I mean, I hate using Beyonce as a example. But
why? Because you...
I'm just saying, she has to be that much better than
everybody else.
Everybody. And yeah. She is. Literally. She would be like the Serena of music.
Yeah.
She's right?
She's the greatest entertainer of all time.
You think? Oh, she's the...
Whoa.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
Yeah, bring it. Come on, you're going too far.
Bring it back.
What the movie say?
Bigs
are going too far.
It's Michael Jackson and Serena.
Okay. Wait, Michael Jackson.
It's Michael Jackson and Serena.
I mean, Steph, ain't nobody know
Beyonce.
That.
Beyonce. Okay.
Michael Jackson and Beyonce.
I thought you were gonna discredit
Michael Jackson.
Mike.
Okay. No, I'm.
So you saying Mike is the greatest entertainer?
Michael Jackson is the greatest entertainer of all time, and then it's Beyonce.
No, like me and Meesh went like I think we are still playing for the Denver Broncos, and we were about to take a trip to Japan, and we're laying in bed, and I was like, we got to go see Mike.
You got it.
And in my head, it was like, yo, Mike is going to be in London. And I never traveled before. She never really traveled outside the country for real. And first time we looked a couple little dollars. And we were like, let's travel a little bit. Let's go see Mike.
Let's go see
in my head, for me, it was like, yo, I think he's the greatest entertainer of all time. And literally like a couple months later, he passed away. So, you know, when I think about the greatest entertainer of all time, I gotta go to Lil Boosie.
Brandon,
have you been to a Lil Boosie concert? Have you been to a Ratchet concert? Come on, boy.
I'm riding with that sound on this one. I got Beyonce over MJ.
You got Beyonce over MJ.
It's close.
Bro, have y'all been to a Beyonce concert?
Yes, I have.
When she take that tub and dance in that water and be splashing. Man, we had some front row seats and the water off her foot hit my lip and I licked it.
No, you didn't, bro.
Well, ask my wife. My wife looked like I was crazy. That water came up Beyonce's leg. Yeah, you nasty. You know what I'm talking about. Nah.
Yeah, he say no. He talking about BBMs and BBWs.
That's just my preference. You know, that's first.
That's first.
Yeah, I mean, they.
But water hitting the lip, that ain't you.
They always curve me anyway, but still, it's just what I. That's what I like.
But you weigh 160. You ain't messing with no.
205 now. I was 160 when I played, now I'm 205. I've been in the gym, bro.
But you can't have no BBW, boy.
Who?
Hoover did, boy.
A lot of skinny guys like bigger women. It's a thing.
I know it's a thing, but he ain't doing what
if
he
you go to the supermarket, you usually see a bigger woman with a smaller man. It's a thing.
It's a
thing. She's stealing his rations.
It's a thing.
All right. So, this is an amazing episode. This is gonna be good. No, I do wanna shift gears for like 2 minutes, and I wanna get y'all thoughts just on the climate, the political climate, and what's going on in the world. Anything y'all wanna say? Cause I see you have Black Voter on. Like, what does that mean?
It's a company, actually, my wife's friend has, and that's the whole push. Just, if we get out to vote, we gonna get our voice heard.
Yes.
And I said on the last episode, I think, my wife's the one that made me vote. I wasn't voting when I was, when I turned 18, I didn't register. I was the dummy that said, man, that's one vote, but that one vote counts. That's what you need to do. The Black voters got to get out there and vote. And I'm not telling anybody who to vote for.
No.
Just go do your research and put your circle on the
paper. Vote for your best interest.
And that's all up. That's all we're asking. Everybody thinks you're politicizing, you're trying to lead people one way or the other.
No.
NBA's doing it right now. NBA has a big vote push. Y'all need to vote. Go vote. They're not saying vote for him or him. Just vote.
Just vote.
And that's what it's about. As a Black man, as a Black people, just go out and vote. Whoever you like, whoever you tend to lean to, whatever. Just get your voice heard. That's all it's about.
I'm not into politics. Never really have been. Have voted before, obviously. But I talked to my mom about what's going on right now and who to vote for. And she said to vote for the lesser of the two evils.
Yes.
It seemed for some reason, regardless of who's in office, they've always done something wrong. It's just... regardless of who's in there, just shit has never, ever been right.
Yeah.
We've been voting. We've been doing this presidential campaign year in and year out, every 4 years, whatever, and shit still ain't right. So at what point is shit going to be fixed and solved? Just curious. That's my two cents. But I'm going to vote, and that's pretty much it. Who I'm voting for is none of your business.
Yeah, I bet. I like that. I guess for me, I'm kind of in the same boat. I just feel like if we educate ourselves, we'll understand more and we'll know where we want to go, right? I just think that we need to understand the mechanics of voting. You know, like there's 13,000 different voting districts. All are different. You know, here in Florida, our deadline to vote is different than it is in California. So you got to understand that, do your research. And really it's coming up. We got 3 weeks in Florida, for real, for real. In California, you got a little bit more time. Understanding how to approach the ballot box is different in different places. Some places you can actually register the day of to vote.
Yeah.
You know, so like there's so much that goes on in our country when it comes to voting that like we don't know. And I feel like there's a lot of people that don't vote because it's overwhelming to them.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess that's my message, is like really understanding the mechanics of voting, the deadlines of registering. If you understand that, then you shift to breaking down the candidates and where they stand on certain topics. It's important, you know, less than 50%, just a little under 50% of the eligible voting population actually stood up and voted in 2016. So if you want your voice to be heard, like Channing saying, like, you gotta vote.
Yeah. I think my problem is we as a community, as Black people, a lot of times the rhetoric is our vote doesn't count. Like, it doesn't matter. People are still being shot on the street. My mom is still poor. Like, what does this matter? And what I can tell you is that if it didn't matter, racists, people, Republicans, will not be working overtime to make your vote not count. If voting didn't matter, why would they care if you voted? Why would they care that people that have felonies could vote? Why would they care that where you live? They are constantly.
Is that voter suppression?
Yes, it's voter suppression.
Exactly what it is.
But even like that,
to me, you're speaking over people's heads.
It's targeted.
Because like
us.
you're talking about that. Like, what does that mean? Voter suppression. What does that mean? Like, you know, these Republicans are speaking over here. Like, nobody understands that.
Because we are unduly impacted by a lot of the policies that they put in place. So even just having identification, a lot of people in poverty may not have a license, or a lot of people, your license may be suspended because you have too many tickets. Well, you can't drive to get to work, right? So then you can't work. Well, how are you supposed to pay the tickets that are supposed to get your license reinstated, right? So they do these things, and they are certainly designed for people that look like us that are going to vote against the Republican agenda to not vote. So if your vote doesn't count, why would they be working so hard for your vote not to matter, for you not to be able to vote? So just to make it plain, there obviously is something to voting, because there wouldn't be redlining where they draw districts where you're, you know, to water down your vote. They wouldn't be doing that if voting didn't matter. And I think that we need to be conscious and be intentional about this election. Like, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg just passed away. Like, RBG, notorious RBG, just passed away. She was a pioneer for reasonable judgment. And now we don't even know if we're going to be able to control her seat. There is so much at stake when it comes to who is the president and who's going to set the tone for the type of country that we're going to have. And if we don't take voting seriously, we can't complain when they start changing laws, right? And it doesn't matter how much money you have. Yes, Trump may be good if you're in a certain tax bracket, but guess what? If he's inciting racism, if he's inciting, you know, white privilege, if he's inciting things that are dangerous to you as a human being, your money's not going to be able to protect you. It's just not. Your money didn't protect you when you had your incident in your neighborhood. Yeah. It didn't matter how expensive the neighborhood was. It didn't matter how much you put on your down payment. You were a black man, and he was scared of you. And if the police were a little bit more jumpy, we don't know what could have happened, right? So voting for Trump or voting for the governor because he protects your money, what is your money going to do for you when a gun is at your head? Mm-hmm. When someone feels empowered to kill you, feel empowered to racially profile you.
Okay, I think what creates a good show is balance and diversity. So what about the people out there is like, I don't think Trump's racist. I think he's just like playing to his base, and you know, he's just doing what he's supposed to do to win. What about that?
If you're racist for pay, you're racist. There's no amount of money that's gonna make me do something that's against who I am. And let's be honest, Trump has been racist since he was born. His daddy was racist.
But how do we know that, though?
But there is,
he's literally done racist things.
He, in his hotels and his real estate stuff, he's been
very racist. He's had lawsuits
against
racist policies for renting out to units.
Policies.
And his daddy did
even
as well.
When black people protest, he calls them thugs. Them white folks in North Carolina, there's some good people out there. Like, people act like, oh, well, how's he? Go back and look. People that don't want to see him as a racist are looking for it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you're not looking for somebody to be, you know, to be a racist, you're not going to go and dig up the stuff. His pack. Well, ask president, you want to say, hey, he called this dude the N-word. You're not going to find that. Go back and look at his other business dealings. Go back and look at his history and his businesses. Been sued a number of times for racial discrimination. Like, you know, we know where he came from. We know he comes from money. He borrowed $1 million from my dad, a small $1 million loan and all. We know where he comes from. We know, like I said before in the past, we know how those people thought back before Jim Crow and Jim Crow and slavery. We know where that lineage is now. Let's not be dumb. And if people are trying to act like that, you're just being naive. You don't want to see it. If you don't want to see the sun, don't go outside.
Yeah. Well, as we know in Australia, just comparing America to different countries that I believe get it right. In Australia, when you hit 18, it's mandated that everyone votes.
A lot of countries.
It's celebrated, okay?
It's a holiday.
There's no teachers going to school. There's nobody going to work. It's celebrated. In America, 13,000 different voting districts. We have to understand the mechanics of voting. If we do that, I feel like you'll be equipped to go to the ballot box. This is shaping up to be probably the most historical, important impactful election that America has ever had. You know, if you want your voice to be heard, it starts right there, I truly believe.
We had to fight to get a meal, yeah, wrongfully accused. We had to fight to get the pills. That's why we write to get a deal. He on the team, he gotta eat, you know, despite his skills. Facts. Keep it riding for the fam, you gotta light the wiggin' wheel straight up. But in the past bag, work up in the trash bag. I'll pass a lie to take the test before I pass class. Yeah, and my family needed bread, I had to come correct.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.